RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
So to the government's new plan to support the construction industry during the economic downturn by underwriting private housing developments. Yeah, you heard right. Lowering the risk for developers. Back on RCR to talk about this is seasoned economist, over 30 years of experience in economic analysis, policy advice, significant roles at the Reserve Bank of New Zealand and International Monetary Fund. Michael Riddell is back with us. Hi, Michael.
Hi, good to be back, Paul.
Okay, did anyone see this coming?
I gather that some of the people who've been donors to the National Party had been calling for something like this for some time. I didn't particularly myself, but you can sort of see a bit of warped logic to it, particularly in the government's desire to accelerate house building. But it really is a strange measure. It's, you know, free insurance to big end of town property developers.
Must mean that the industry downturn or the economic downturn is, what, substantial?
Yeah, and, you know, house building, we had a really big boom over the last couple of years. But nonetheless, despite the fact that Chris Bishop and Chris Pink are talking up how bad things are at the moment, the number of building approvals for new houses is still roughly twice the level that they were being granted at the bottom of the 2008-09 recession. So, yeah, we've come a long way off the peak, but it's not as if activity levels are extraordinarily low. I suspect some developers have just bent ministers' ears, and ministers these days of both governments like doing what they think of as smart, active stuff, helping out sectors that they favour. It's just a very different model from the way in which we did things for decades in New Zealand, which was, say, people in the market, private businesses take risks, they capitalise, they keep the gains, they live with the losses.
That's how most of us have understood it. So funding comes from the unused, lucky that was there, Kiwi Build and Build Ready Development Pathway programs. So they've already answered where the money's coming from, I suppose.
Yeah, so there were some of these projects, the sort of policy in place under Labor on a more limited basis. This extends it. We haven't seen any of the costings or anything. There's no risk analysis being published. The government tells us it's going to be a time-limited intervention, but there's actually no time frame specified. So we actually have no idea whether those reallocated budgets are sufficient or not for what's taking place here.
So in your understanding so far, what is the offer? What's on offer here to the sector?
The essence of the argument is that banks are reluctant to lend to property developers. Property developers doing, say, apartment blocks or townhouse developments will typically rely on a certain level of pre-sales, and it's only if they can get those pre-sales that the bank will give them money. So effectively what the government is doing here is doing a deal with developers and saying, well, we commit that if you can't sell your property at a market rate, we will guarantee that we'll take it off your hands at a price that's a bit below the market rate. How much below, we don't know. That's supposed to give certainty to the banks and developers and make it more willing that, more likely that that funding will be available. But what it does is sort of superimpose ministers and officials' judgments about what's viable, sensible, what should be built, where, all with no framework, no analysis, no pricing, just an awful lot of discretion handed over to a bunch of officials.
Those houses could end up then being owned by the government if the development goes south. That could be quite a clever way, though, of locking in a slightly below market price now for something that is stock and could be available a bit later. Do you think there's a business thinking in there on the government side?
I think the business thinking is mostly this one of just providing more assurance to banks.
Right.
I think what they'll be hearing from property developers is, and this happens in every downturn, understandably, banks become more conservative about lending. If they thought a bit more about what might happen if they do take on the houses, they'd realise that the sort of scenario in which the government ends up having to buy these houses is one in which the market is a lot weaker than people had expected and prices are falling. So what they could end up doing is having actually overpaid for a house that they could have bought more cheaply if the developer had just been allowed to put their prices on the properties on the market and take whatever the market would bear.
The, quality and size of homes vary. There's nothing that I see and hear that stops you wanting to build a luxury mansion.
That's right. And I mean, they would see that as a feature rather than a bug, right? I mean, they'd say this is not just about sort of, you know, social housing or low-end housing. It's about improving overall supply and affordability. But you do have to wonder why we'd be giving free insurance, particularly to people who might be building sort of mansion-quality houses.
Yeah, okay. And I'm just looking at the benefits here. It stimulates construction. Well, that's kind of stalled, hasn't it? Construction, that's the issue.
Yeah, and I mean, I think a lot of economists looking at the data at the moment think that we were probably almost at the point where things were going to level out. And of course, interest rates have started coming down now. So what you see in a typical business cycle is, you know, it takes a few months and then activity picks up again. You know, ministers, the Minister of Housing and Urban Development, they don't have any better read than the banks do on the state of the economic cycle or when it would make sense to see activity picking up. Building activity tends to be one of the most cyclical aspects of all economies. It's not just a New Zealand thing. So, yeah, building activity is at a low ebb, but could go a bit further down. But it would pick up because that's what it does every single cycle.
Right, yeah. Job preservation was the next one on the benefits list. You don't want all the tradies heading to Australia, do you?
Well, I mean, again, it's an old argument, but what we've got here is sort of a picking winners mentality. There's a lot of people who've suffered in the last couple of years as the economy's been squeezed to get inflation back out of the system. Most of them don't have the offer of free insurance from the Crown. You know, I've had a family member whose business failed during that period. You know, did they get support from the government? No, they didn't. I mean, that's just the sort of risk that you take when you go into business. And the nature of skilled workers in the construction industry is, yeah, they do flow to Australia when things are better over there, and they flow back to New Zealand when things are better here. It's a relatively integrated market. Yes, Australia's richer than we are. Their economy's holding up better than ours is at the moment. But these things are swings and roundabouts. Ours will recover.
And market readiness. The initiative ensures houses are ready for buyers when interest rates drop, potentially smoothing market fluctuations. Is it the responsibility of the New Zealand taxpayer to underwrite people's, I don't know, mental well-being being soothed so the market fluctuations aren't sort of giving them a roller coaster ride of potential negative equity? I guess that is what that means. But should we be paying for that? Should I be paying for any of that?
No, we shouldn't. And, you know, if you want to provide insurance, you should charge a proper insurance premium for it. But that would then put the whole question back, well, what's the market not doing that means that the government has to intervene like this? And again, there's been no analysis presented. It's a pretty shocking example of policymaking, is that they haven't even got the pretense of papers there to justify this intervention.
And it's Auckland, Hamilton, Tauranga, Wellington, Christchurch initially, but program will be available nationwide, but targeted towards, yeah, the high population areas.
Yeah, and I mean, the minimum, you've got to have 30 properties being built in a development. So I guess most small places, you wouldn't find too many 30 property developments taking place at any one time.
That's right. Well, that makes it unfair too then, again, doesn't it? That's an unfairness factor.
Well, indeed. I mean, this preferences the big end of town. If you're a really established big property developer, you get access to the scheme. If you're a builder building one or two houses a year, you can't. It's just not the way things should be done. You shouldn't be preferencing the big and the established. And it's what feeds the cynicism that, you know, I don't know whether this is because there were donations to the National Party or New Zealand First or anything of the sort, but it feeds the impression that that's what's going on.
Right.
And it's not an impression that we want. If that's not really what's shaping things, if it is, it's even worse, of course.
Yeah, you can just imagine the mainstream media reporting of this in the next few days. You can kind of see where it might go. Okay, that's interesting. Also want to mention this, and it's something that you've retweeted from your X account, and that is the 2024 RBNZ annual report. I think Eric Crampton asks folk to count the mentions of the various terms in the report. So there's climate, carbon, inflation, price stability, recession. You might want to go through the numbers, but no mention of recession.
It is quite extraordinary, but in fairness to the bank, the Treasury was the same in the budget earlier this year and their documents. You know, they claim now that they were always aware there was a recession. It's not mentioned once. So I think both agencies, to some extent, are sort of playing politics. In the Reserve Bank's case, those numbers you mentioned, I mean, there are as many mentions of climate change and carbon as there are of inflation and monetary policy. The Reserve Bank's job as monetary policy is getting inflation down. There's just a consistent loss of focus in too many of our government agencies, and the Reserve Bank's a good example.
But if there has been a recession, you should maybe mention it, you know, if there actually has been one.
You would at least
have one recession, you know, one mention of it.
You would think so, and, you know, particularly when that recession resulted explicitly from your choices as the bank. I mean, the recession was one that we had to have. We had to squeeze inflation back out of the system. But, you know, it's part of a wider critique of that annual report is there's no serious reflection on what's gone on how they've run policy, whether they've done it well, whether they've made mistakes, how well they've done it compared to, say, peers overseas. In the US, they've had what looks like a soft landing. We've had a recession. We basically faced similar inflation problems. Why did we do worse than they did? I don't have all the answers, but they've got the expertise, and there's just nothing of that in their annual report.
It's like Fawlty Towers, don't mention the war.
Indeed.
Don't mention the recession. Michael Riddell, always good to have you on. Thanks for coming back, and we'll talk again soon.
Good, pleasure to be here.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.